From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Melissa Block.
And I'm Robert Siegel. Before sitting down to talk with Kenneth Ackerman about the man he wrote a book about, we went out to a statue of that man. It stands just east of the Capitol building in Washington, D.C.
To me, the most striking thing about this statue is that it's here. Anyone who's lived in Washington has driven past it dozens of times. Anyone who works or lives on Capitol Hill has passed it hundreds of times. And literally no one knows what it is or that it exists.
It is a column with a standing figure on top, a statue of President James A. Garfield, who was shot on this date, July 2, 1881. The monument went up a few years later.
On the top is President Garfield looking very distinguished. Underneath it, there are three partly naked figures, which Garfield probably would have cringed at if he were to see them now.
They are all men, however.
They are all men, so Lucretia, his wife, would have been okay with it, I guess. One is of a student, one is of a soldier, and one is of what appears to be a lawgiver.
A legislator. If you can imagine the statue's line of sight, President Garfield is gazing out at the National Gallery of Art, which wasn't there yet in 1881. In those days, there was a train station on that spot, the train station where James Garfield was shot by a disgruntled campaign worker named Charles Guiteau, a man who thought that he deserved a diplomatic appointment in Europe. Kenneth Ackerman tells the story of President Garfield in his book Dark Horse. It is a story of surprises, a surprise nominee who showed surprising growth in office and whose murder not only surprised but stunned the country.
The reason this assassination is so dramatically different than any other like it in American history is that Guiteau considered himself part of the mainstream of politics. He considered himself part of the dominant wing of the Republican Party, the stalwarts. And what he was trying to do was not simply to kill a person, not simply to shoot the president, but he wanted to replace one ruling group, the half-breeds, with a different ruling group, the stalwarts led by Chet Arthur, his friend as he saw him.
He was the vice president of the United States, Chester Allen Arthur.
Yes. When Guiteau shoots Garfield, he makes a statement as he's being led away by the police. He says, "I am a stalwart and Arthur will be president." He proclaims that, and that line gets into all of the newspapers. As a result, many people initially thought that Arthur may have had something to do with it, that there may have actually been a conspiracy. There's never any evidence to back that up. But still, he had to deal with the onus of the president being shot to put him in the White House.
Let's take stock of President James Garfield. He, after all, had only been sworn in March. In those days, the presidency began in March, and by July 2nd, he'd been shot and spent the next more than 2 months really dying is all that he did after that.
Yes.
He was an unusual man. He was a Civil War general, a scholar of some sort, I gather.
Yeah, Garfield was unusual in a number of ways. He was the first academic to become president. He was a college professor. He was born in poverty. He pulled himself up by his bootstrings.
Which he didn't romanticize, I gather.
No, in fact, if anything, when asked about it, he said very bluntly that being poor was no benefit to his life, that he wished his parents had money, that they could have given him some advantages of it. He didn't think it built character. It was something that he worked very hard to overcome. He studied very hard. When he was a teenager, he first fell in love with reading, and he became an avid reader. He was doing a lot of manual labor. He worked on canal boats in Ohio, something he actually enjoyed. He enjoyed being around boats. But he worked his way through Williams College in Massachusetts, and then he came back to Ohio and became a teacher. Ultimately, he was very good at what he did. He became president of the Eclectic University, which was a new school at the time. Then he became a state legislator. He was a very talented speaker, and he entered the Civil War as a colonel.
He gave one speech, you note, in German, I believe.
Yes, he was the first president to campaign in a foreign language. When a group of Germans came to visit him at his farm in Mentor, Ohio, he spoke in German.
What else about James Garfield was remarkable?
Well, the thing that's striking about Garfield, he was only president for 4 months, or for 6 months, rather. He was shot after four. The last 2 months, as you say, were spent dying. During those 4 months, though, he was someone who had to grow into the job. When he became president, he wasn't expecting it. He hadn't prepared for it. He was a very brilliant man. He knew public policy. But as far as having the personal steel, the personal toughness to be president of the United States and deal with the kinds of crossfires you have to deal with, it wasn't something he was ready for. And as a result, the first few months, he really was pushed and pulled by other people, particularly Roscoe Conkling and James Blaine in these fights over patronage.
Senator Conkling of New York.
And James G. Blaine of Maine, who became his Secretary of State. He basically brought Blaine into his cabinet as a counterweight to Conkling. What he ended up was being stuck between the two of them on their personal gripes. It was only after he had been really pushed into a corner that he finally drew a line.
James Garfield also seems to illustrate an unfortunate principle of political life, which was nothing made him quite so beloved as getting shot and killed.
Yes. When he was shot, it really electrified the country. When Lincoln was shot, it was viewed as an aftershock of the Civil War. Lincoln had died for great principles, for emancipating the slaves, for saving the Union. Garfield was shot in the back as an outgrowth of a fight, a political power struggle over patronage. And that shocked people that the presidency had been dragged to that level.
This reeked of Europe or South America to Americans at the time.
Shortly before Garfield was shot, he had been advised by John Sherman, who was a United States senator at the time, that he had heard some threats against Garfield, and he suggested that he might want to get some guards in the White House. Garfield took that almost as an insult. He wrote back a very terse letter rejecting the idea, saying, "I'm the president of a democratic country and a free nation, and I shouldn't have to worry about it." When he was shot, it was the first time that an American president was really viewed in a personal way by the people. He let people into his personal struggle. He and his wife both became almost like sick family members to people across the country. His daily medical reports were telegraphed across the country several times a day. People followed the twists and turns of his sickness over that period of months and really formed a very strong bond with him.
Well, Kenneth Ackerman, thank you very much for talking with us today.
Oh, it was my pleasure.
Kenneth Ackerman, who is the author of Dark Horse, The Surprise Election and Political Murder of President James A. Garfield.